but they'll come into play. Those of you on the webcast who are part of sister churches here, you should have received an email from Jim with 4 attachments at like 6 o'clock tonight, and another one earlier today with 1 attachment. You'll need those during this time. So I was asked to talk about Bible Club, and at first I thought, like, Bible Club? Really? Because it isn't formulaic. It's really dependent on the audience, who the kids are. It's dependent on the teacher herself, like me, and my personality and what I'm comfortable with and how I work versus another person. So I really struggled to define it clearly and explain it in a universally applicable way. But I think that when we're done today, you'll be able to do 3 things. You'll be able to explain what a Bible club is and what it takes to have one. You'll have resources and a starting point if you or anyone in your ministry wants to do one. And thirdly, you'll be able to evaluate and take at least 1 thing away that's applicable to you right now, in your ministry right now or your sphere of influence right now. So to begin with, I was asked to define the purpose of Bible Club. Bible Club's purpose is to teach the scriptures to children who come from unsaved homes or families that do not attend a sound church. It is not a replacement for Sunday school or even primarily a supplement for Sunday school. The audience, again, is unsaved children or ones who come from homes that don't go to a sound church. I know of several people who've had Bible clubs, and each one has a different starting story. The one I've been a part of, and Pucci's been a part of, his family's been a part of, and West Duluth's starting story happened like this. About 8 years ago, I was working at an elementary school, and a student in 4th grade who couldn't read, he struggled to write his name, brought a Bible to school one day for silent sustained reading. And he was like, "Miss Miller, will you read this to me?" And at that point, I can't just sit down and read the Bible to a child. It's like, I can't right now, but why did you choose that book? And he goes, "My mom said it's the most important book, and I need to know what's inside of here, but I can't read it." And that was pretty striking. So at that same exact time, the Joneses lived right across the street from the school, and they were willing to open up their home to any children who wanted to come after school. And there was another family who was from church whose children attended that school, so they invited all their friends, and that's how Bible Club started. And since then, there have probably been, I would say, 100 kids or more who've come through those doors over the years, and they've heard the gospel. Some have gotten saved. Some have had seeds planted. I don't know, but the Lord knows. Other Bible clubs were started with people's neighbors, their kids' friends. I know a woman who taught first grade at a school, and she ended up starting a Bible club after school with her students. You might know more about this, Philip, than I do, but I know that at our school at Edison, there was an after-school Bible club held right inside the school, sponsored by a Christian academy in Duluth. But I've heard that anyone, there's some kind of law out there, that if anyone wants to use school grounds after school for a Bible instruction, that they can, free of charge. Yeah. Philip said equal access for you in TV land. So that's another option or another avenue to start one if you want to. What it takes to run it is the other thing I was asked to talk about. And it takes abiding in Jesus Christ, obviously, a vision for the lost around you. It takes love. Many kids who came to a Bible club in West Duluth, and I think many kids in the world in general, come from homes that are dominated by selfishness, fighting, and addiction. They don't know what love is. Selflessness and genuinely caring about someone else is a fairy tale for them. So I'd like you right now to take a minute and think, you don't know what love is? How would that affect your understanding of the Bible and of God? And then share it with your neighbor. So, share your neighbor. come back together in like half a minute. And wrap it up, last sentence to share. And we're back. So from what I've heard is that it would really affect your understanding of John 3:16, the love of the Father and of the Son. I heard you guys saying those kind of ideas. There is a boy who came to Bible Club for 3 years. He was my neighbor. And this kid came from a home who, his home was dominated by addiction and abuse, and it was a mess. And he told me after 3 years of Bible Club, one day after vacation Bible school that he came to, he goes, "I got saved today." And I told him, "You told me you were saved a week ago." And he goes, "I lied." That's fair. So why? What's the story? And he fills me in that when he first started coming to Bible Club, he had never heard of God or heaven in his life. And he goes, "It took me forever to figure out what you were even talking about. And then once I understood what you were talking about, I thought that had to be a fairy tale. If there is a God, there's no way he loves me." And then I asked, "So what made the difference today? Why'd you get saved today?" And he said, "After Bible school, we went to that family's house." And this was a family of believers. And he goes, "I watched them. The dad asked for a sandwich, and the mom didn't swear at him. She brought him one with a smile, like she actually likes him. And then the little sister wanted to play sorry, and the brother said okay and played sorry with her. And I don't think he wanted to play. And he played three games. And she cheated. And the brother saw it, and he didn't scream and yell at her. He just, like, called her out on it. She said sorry, and they kept playing." And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "So I always thought God loving me was a fairy tale, but I thought a happy family was a fairy tale. And until I saw that, I couldn't believe there was a God." So in a Bible Club situation, or even if you're with children from what I'm going to call now more average families, worldly families, they don't know what love is. And that greatly affects their view of God in the Bible. Again, the audience of Bible Club is unchurched children. Another thing that you need to make it work is realistic expectations. Don't assume that these kids know what you want them to do. They don't. So model it again and again and again, and demonstrate and show them and act it out. And be flexible as the adult. Understand that the kid might be having a really bad day and they might be upside down in their chair and all over. So you could choose to yell at them, but it's not going to do anything. Or you can choose to give them a chair by themselves, kind of off a little bit, and they can be upside down while they listen. It doesn't really matter if everybody else can learn. And another thing you need is prepared teachers. And lastly, a meeting place. The story I shared, we met at the Jones's house for many years. Until we all grew that, we were having like 25 kids a week and just can't cram that into their living room anymore. So we began renting out a community center to meet there. Some helpful hints are, as the adult, set the climate there. Model Jesus Christ. His love, his grace, and his trustworthiness. Remember, they don't have that in their lives. Developmental books. Child development will tell you that children learn to trust by the time they're 18 months old. Largely before they can speak, they know who they can trust. So then if you're ministering to children who've been neglected and abused, they know they can't trust anybody. So if you're trying to share the gospel with them and they're expected to trust a person they've never seen, that's pretty tough. So it's your role as the adult there to demonstrate that you're trustworthy. When you tell them something, you keep their word. You care about them, you listen to them. Another thing that we do to set the climate is to differentiate our own preferences from what's actually needed. If they're free to learn and the person next to them is also free to learn, in other words, there's no obstacles for them to be able to concentrate, and they're emotionally and physically safe, then that's great. They might smell like cat pee, and they might talk about the latest rap music, but who cares? Let them learn the Word of God. Also, another helpful hint is to know your own goals. This should be the bulk of your lesson aim every week. Your goal should be twofold. First, salvation. I'm sorry, this is all on a handout if you want to look at it in front of you. But the goal should be, first of all, salvation, which is not just reciting facts. It's understanding concepts of sin, love, punishment, substitution, death, God's goodness, heaven's goodness, trust, Jesus' deity and humanity. Those concepts need to be understood for them to understand the gospel. Secondly, the goal is always trusting God in your daily life. Like Anne brought out in junior church stories, you bring out the attributes of God and how God was intervening in their life. That's what we should do when we're teaching Bible stories too. God was intervening in this person's life. And we can trust God in our daily life right here. And when you go home, and when you're on the school bus and everywhere else, God is with you there too. Another helpful hint is to know your audience, to have realistic expectations for their age, development, and background. I keep telling you Bible Club's different, and it is different based on whatever kids you have there. And the one that I was a part of in West Duluth, a lot of these kids came from rough homes. But as far as understanding their background, a little girl who was about 4 years old came up to me one day, and she, like, never talked. I didn't know she could talk, to be honest with you. But she waddles up, and she puts her hand on her hip, and as proud as can be, she waves, and she goes, "Hey, B," and finishes the B word. I was like, hey. To her, that was a perfectly appropriate greeting, and she was really, really proud of it. So, in ministering to kids, have realistic expectations. To her, that's not wrong. To her, that's being friendly. And she actually spoke. So that's helpful. Another helpful thing is to plan times for interaction. This isn't in Bible clubs or things that are relationship-based where kids need to learn to what love is and what trust is. They need to interact with people around them who are going to show them love and trust. So build that into your schedule. One way that we did that at Bible Club was we had journaling activity every time with a group leader. So the leader would have like five kids in their group, the same five kids every time, so you've got to really know them. And the journaling activity would occur after the Bible story, and it would have prompts like, "I have a question about," or "I'm really confused about," or "I disagree with," or "my favorite part was," or "if I was the main character, I would feel," da 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 da. Those kind of prompts. And the child would write or draw a picture and talk about it with the adult and then give it to the adult who that week would write a response back of, "Oh, I have a question about that too," or "This is how I understand that answer," or "Yeah, I would be really upset if I were that character too," or "This reminds me of the way God acts in my life, like in this way." And the kids loved getting those answers back every week. It was like their connection to a person who cared and thought about them during the week. And it was a connection to God in the Bible. So plan times for interactions with them. When you're speaking with them, listen to them without judging them. And be sensitive to teachable moments. The last helpful hint I have is to use... It's not the last, but close to the last. Is to use handy materials. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are a lot of things out there that are pretty user-friendly. Abeka cards, you can just pick them up. They have stories right there with them. And if you don't have time to really dig into a Bible story and form everything you want, just use an Abeka card and read the lessons that are there and tweak it to your lesson name. That's not too tough. If you already teach Sunday school, use the Sunday school lessons. Wanda Nazworth wrote a really big book filled with lessons, creation to Christ, that are really easy to pick up and just do. The Lamb book comes with a video even. You can pop a video in instead. So does the book, The King of Glory. And that video is actually engaging and kind of interesting to watch. So you could play the video. If you're looking for gospel ideas, there's the gospel toolbox. All those things are available. Or you can make your own materials. Another helpful hint is to maintain contact with the families and reach out to their friends and neighbors. this ministry is to kids, but it's really helpful to get to know their parents, if you can, and reach out to them because those parents need to be saved. A few years ago, one mom and I had, like, somewhat regular contact about her daughter, but I wouldn't call us friends by any means. And one day she called out of the blue and said, hi. And I was like, hi. And there's a super long pause, like, why did she call me? Like, she's not answering, saying anything yet. And so I said, I have your daughter's shirt or something. She left it in my car. I can drop it over today. And she's like, yeah, that'd be great. So when I went over there, she was, like, thrilled to see me and explained that she was really struggling with mental illness. She was convinced she was demon-possessed, and she didn't know what to do. And I was the only person she knew who believed the Bible, and she thought I could help. So here's this person who, at that time, was an acquaintance, not a friend, who invited me into her home. We ended up going through the gospel many times and working through a really tough patch in her life, and she got saved. So maintaining contact with the parents and their neighbors and being a part of their life is very important and helpful. Another helpful hint is if you have helpers, capitalize on their strengths, which is true of any ministry you're ever in. Know the strengths of the people you're with. Everybody is really, really good at something that I'm not good at. And if I know what they're good at, it's going to make it a lot more effective. Like, for example, some of my helpers were so good with parents. Like, they could go to these kids' house, and the mom could be half-dressed, honestly, and, like, high on something, but they could still interact with her and be kind of friendly and get the kids out and way out of my comfort zone. I'm not good at that. But others were super good at it. Or driving kids, or leading small groups, or doing skits, or snacks, or crafts, which I'm not good at all. Other people can make amazing crafts. Verse visuals, and games, and organization, flexibility, managing prizes. We had a prize box for being kind to somebody, learning your verse, and answering a question. If you did those three things, you got a prize every week. Or they got Bible Club bucks that they would use toward prizes. Relating to other kids, keeping kids on task, being creative, all those things are strengths that helpers have, as well as the older kids in the group. So as the leader, it's really helpful to know, like, that kid's really good at leading songs, or that kid's really patient with younger kids. I can put those two together to work on verses, that kind of thing. I included an example schedule here. This is only an example of what we did, but each Bible Club is different. We played games during arrival time. Then we had a snack in assigned groups with a leader who had an idea of what concepts were to be covered that day and how to discuss them or just interact with the kids and form relationships. That was part of snack time. It was directed. Then we did a review activity, a story with the gospel. And then, again, they were assigned to groups for a wrap-up activity that reinforced the lesson aim, like that journaling, or working on crafts that had to do with the verse or the story, that kind of thing. And then during dismissal, we sang songs. And so one of the common questions is, how can you do that with multiple ages? Because there were kids there from 5 years old to 15. And when you're in a church plant setting, you'll end up with classes with really multiple ages too. So in front of you, you should have a handout. It says something about teaching children in multi-age groups. Right now, I'd like you to look at that example schedule that's in your handout and compare it to teaching children with multi-age groups. While you compare them, think through the tips for multi-age groups and where it could fit in this schedule. Like, for example, the schedule starts with games during arrival. How will that affect or be work into teaching multi-age groups and so forth? So go through each of those example schedule parts and teaching multi-ages and see how you can get those two to mesh. Does that make sense? Okay. Once you have some ideas in your own mind, just go ahead and talk them out with the people next to you. Take 3 minutes. I'll even set a timer so we'll stay on time. Hey, thanks. The timer went off. Wrap it up with your last comment or two, and we'll move on. I'd like you to think about what you heard in your group, and if you wouldn't mind sharing one thing that you thought was helpful. One thing about multi-ages, working with that schedule, or something that you can take away, whether you're teaching Sunday school or involved in teaching at Antigo, or something like that. Most of you will be involved in that portion.
I don't know if our group got to this, but I know that trying to differentiate instruction and mix things up to keep their interest, acting something out is real powerful. Plus, it's a great way, if you tell them, it's one thing. If they talk about it, discuss it among themselves, that's better yet. But if they do something with it, that's the best. And it also, holds the attention of the younger kids. So, and then, Robert, you had one.
Well, you're supposed to share what you learned from the group. No, what you said. You didn't say anything.
Anybody else want to share?
Need a intervention over here.
Pooji mentioned using the snack time as a getting things organized and getting the kids into groups, and then having it have a goal during that snack time and how effective that was.
There was Angela, her strength as one of the helpers was snack. It's amazing what she can do with like items of food and building it into amazing, amazing objects that the kids build, and wow. And once I was talking with a girl who was like 11 at that time. I had come to Bible Club for 4 years. And out of nowhere, she's like, hey, do you remember that time we built an altar and a sheep out of marshmallows and pretzel sticks? I was like, yeah, that was like 3 years ago. And she's like, that was awesome. I totally remember that. Like, they remember that stuff. It's pretty cool. Anybody else like to share? No? No for sharing. Okay. Next, you're going to repeat that kind of activity, but now I'd like you to look at your handouts. You have three sets of them. One at the top says meeting learners' needs in first and second grade. Another says meeting needs in third and fourth grade. And the third reads meeting learners' needs in fifth and sixth grade class. Pastor asked me to talk about different characteristics of age groups and learning styles. And I had done that before at a Sunday school training, which is why your handout looks like a chart. For our purposes, you're just going to look at the needs portion of the chart, the far left column. Ignore the middle and the right column. This is a handout that you can use if you're ever in a position where you need to teach about learners' age groups for a Sunday school thing. Or you could just use it for yourself if you're teaching the fifth and sixth grade class, for example, or something like that. Right now, though, I'm going to assign... I'm going to assign Poochie. No. I'm going to assign each of you to, right now, think of the games during arrival time, the snack time, and review time. Those three parts of the schedule. And maybe Melinda and Philip, you guys can do first and second grade. Think of how to meet their needs in those three areas of the schedule. Robert, you can be by yourself. You can do third and fourth grade. Those three areas of the schedule, game time, snack time, and review time. How can you meet their needs from third and fourth grade? And Pooti and Karen, you're doing fifth and sixth grade. Again, those same three times. Game time, snack time, review time. How can you meet their needs at that time? And I'll give you 2 minutes. First and second, third and fourth, fifth and sixth. Game, snack, review. glad to be back. Thanks. So the timer went off, and we're going to regroup and gather again. So looking at the first and second grade class, the first thing they need is they learn more by doing than listening. So let's start with Philip and Melinda. What did you guys come up with? How can you meet that need during the snack time, review time, and game time?
When it comes to game time, we just have a game that all are able to participate in equally and equally succeed, and not have a game that would highlight some kids' strengths and make other kids feel like they stink.
Yeah, totally. Relays. Relays usually make one kid feel like they stink.
Yeah.
And you have five kids waiting in line and one kid moving. So that could be something to rethink.
For review, we just put to ask questions that they can answer, not try to stump them, but ask questions you know that they know, that you can build on in that sense, instead of trying to ask them about, you know, the hypostatic union or to explain the Trinity, but stick with basic things that they can build off of that way.
Yeah. And that age group, first and second grade, is known for fear. So if you single them out and ask them a tough question, that's going to trigger a major fear response and freak them out.
As far as snack goes, Philip and I both thought it was very important to have snacks that don't taste like garbage. But secondly, also, to try to facilitate relationships or bonding times during snack or group kids together that, you know, can reach out to other kids or to build relationships instead of segregate them or put the cool kids with the cool kids or the weirdos with the weirdos, but try to teach kids that they can reach out to other people outside of their own group.
During snack time, too, they learn by doing, so let them build an altar. Who has an altar? Nobody has an altar anymore. That's weird. So teach them what an altar is. Let them build it with their stuff and figure it out. During review, too, they think about having all kids participate, because they learn more by doing. So in traditional review, if you ask the question, you have, like, two or three kids thinking about the answer and, like, 15 being like, done. So figure out, like, maybe you ask the question, you give them some time to think, you have a visual there, and then you say, I'm going to draw a name on a bag. I'm not repeating the question. If I draw your name and you get it right, you earn a point for the class. If you get it wrong, you earn a point for the teacher. That kind of thing. We'll keep kids engaged. So Robert, you're up. Third and fourth grade.
Our team disagreed on a lot of things.
The team of one.
Yeah. I think for the game, this says that they like to be in groups, so you could have them play teams. It says the girls don't get along with the boys, so you could have girls versus boys every week, and they probably would never get bored of that.
Yeah.
For snack, it says that they like creative things. I know I'm discussing children as if they're aliens that I've never seen before, but I really don't understand children, and I'm sure I'll learn. But they like creative expression, so I guess have them make things. And then this says for application, they need specific applications. So I guess you pretty much just spoon-feed them, this is how it applies to your life, and then exactly tell them.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, hoping they figure it out, because this sounds like they won't.
Yeah, like during snack time is a fantastic time. Let's say the lesson is about fear. Why not at snack time say, hey, I want you to think about a time where you felt afraid. And I'm going to tell you a time I was really afraid when I was your age. And you tell your story. And everybody else is free to tell their story. And they're starting to think about when they were afraid. Well, how did you deal with it? What did you do? What helped you? Then during story time, hey, this story, this person's afraid. Here's what helped them, knowing that God was with them. Here's how God delivered them. The sovereignty of God came into play. God's omniscience, omnipotence comes into play. Then afterwards, you bring it up again. Hey, earlier today you shared that story with me. You're afraid when da-da-da happened. What do you know now that can help you next time? That kind of specific application. Move on to fifth and sixth grade with Karen and Poochie.
We talked about some things that would work, different needs for the kids. They want to identify with a group, and they like, what was the other one? I think they like competition. Was that there? No. Anyway, so we talked about with the snack time, just there wasn't really much to be said. They like food, and so just give them something. Pretty much, one thing we did in fifth and sixth grade, we'd have bigger snacks if they participated more, whether it was memorizing verses, whatever. They really get a kick out of that. And kids in fifth and sixth grade are real big on fair, so we, you know, they would tell you if they didn't get a treat or whatever. So, and we had a bag of candy that we sent them away with, not away with, but we used. But for the review, we do stuff like Philip had done a thing where his daughter helped him draw a life-size person for the armor of God, and we had them, the kids actually make all the parts in class and put all those on and review it as we went through the armor of God. And sometimes we did like a news report story where they would actually get in groups and discuss all the parts of it, and then they would do like an anchor story like in the news, and then they would review it. So it was, they really got kick out of that. And some of the games we do stuff like since they need heroes, we do Simon. This was Karen's idea. You could do Simon Says with an angle that recaps the story that you thought, you know, that you did. Some of the games I remember doing in fifth and sixth grade, we did this one thing where we would have extra time at the end of the day where we would play witness, where we would have them all draw four lists. One would be a mentality, a worldview, a background, a life circumstance, and we put a number, but they wouldn't see what all the numbers were. And we rolled. Kids would pick numbers, and then they would have like four different things. So it might be a Baptist wrestler who had a fire where he lost all his family members and blah, blah, blah. And the kids would have to figure out how to witness to him, and they would interact. And so it was a lot of fun. So those are some of the things. But they really, you know, fifth and sixth graders just want to interact at the level they're at. And every once in a while when you do some of these games, you get some kid that just never talks, and all of a sudden you do a skit, and he's just like the loudest person. And you're like, wow. So you just have to figure out what that trigger point is.
Now we're going to repeat this activity, but you're going to think about the story time, gospel time, the ending activity, and the song time. The last four on those lists, okay? So you're thinking again of the story time, gospel time, the activity time that happens after the story, that can include the memory verse or things like that, and songs at the end. Thinking of those times, now I want you to apply it to a new age group. So Linda and Philip, you can do third and fourth grade. Robert, you can do fifth and sixth grade. Poochie and Karen, you can do first and second grade. Look through that list, the left column of needs. Think about the needs of those students and how can you meet those needs during the story, gospel, activity and assigned groups, and the songs during dismissal. Got 2 minutes. take me off. Oh, I am off mute. You're good. Thanks. Wrap up your last comments, and then we'll share the need of the child and how you can meet it during those times. So, Robert, you want to go first this time? Sweet.
What?
So Robert, you were fifth and sixth grade, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll wait till everybody's done chatting. Okay, that might be a while. I'll just go. You guys, come on. So, should I actually... Oh, wait. Look, I think they need more time.
Let's go.
Oh, okay. For the story time, since they need the specific review again, or need the specific application, it would make sense to give them really concrete ways that applies to their life, or asking them to use examples from their lives, because they love sharing. During the gospel time, now that they're starting to understand symbolism, we can use analogies more and stories, because they're starting to catch the parallels. The activity, they're really energetic, and they like competing with each other, so you could pit them against each other in groups, and you could even establish a teammate mentality by having everybody in the group has to know the answer, and you might call on anyone in the group to encourage the group to get the answer together. We've noticed that even in our fifth and sixth grade class, that one of the students is consistently helping two of the other students. So when it looks like he's whispering in class, about two-thirds of the time he's giving them the handout answer to fill in, which Alicia cued me in on, like, you can't yell at Grant. He's actually telling Micah the answer. Like, oh, huh. Yeah, well... Poochie and Philip are, yeah, I mean, you guys are in that class too, or at times, so you should know too. Turns out they're not talking. And then the songs during dismissal. I thought this was neat. They're looking for heroes. It would be good to spell out that we're actually singing about Jesus particularly, not just like, let's sing a song now, but look, Jesus is like this. That's pretty neat, huh? Because, and then you talk about it a little bit, and that could be an interesting thing to build up over time.
Yeah. We are going to wrap it up. I'm really sorry, but I'm sure you all had wonderful things to share. Jim's giving me this symbol, so it's time to wrap it up. But right now I'd like you just to think if you have any questions about the purpose of Bible Club or what it takes to run it. And just take a minute to personally reflect, look through your handouts, and choose one thing that you can take away. One thing that's helpful to remember, then the ministry you have now or the spheres of influence you have now. You can circle and make a comment by it or just lock it away in your head. But think of a question you have if you've got one, and one thing that was helpful that you personally want to take away. And I'll give you half a minute to think of a question if you got it. What?
How did you, as kids get older, they have a tendency to get cooler. How did you keep bringing those kids back that were older?
Relationship. It was 100% relationship. Knowing that somebody cared and, like, still keeping in touch with them and caring about them and their interests and where they're at in life. Yep. And they had a sense of belonging, like Tyler, who was an older student, really liked rap a lot, and he got saved last year, and so I was like, why don't you make a rap about what you're learning? And he was like, okay, and he got really into it, and he performed it for the whole Bible Club, and it was excellent. It was all about what life was like before he was saved, how he felt all alone and nobody cared, and then he understood the gospel, and he gave the gospel clearly, and now he knows that God is with him. It was tremendous, but he had a place there. That's it. I think Jim's coming now. I think you guys are moving on to Sunday school.